東京からお届けする G ポッド、インターネットでお聞きいただけます。 URL は外人ポッド .com。
Direct from Tokyo, Japan. This is the G pod. Bringing you the best of Japan. Anthony Joe hosts the G pod.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the G-Pod, coming to you from the intergalactic headquarters of Gaijin Pod in downtown Tokyo. I'm your host, Anthony Joe, and on today's show, we're going to be talking to Michael Gakuran, who runs the website gakuran.com, about his latest post titled Top 50 Japanese Buzzwords of 2013. It's actually kind of interesting. Every year for the past couple of years, Michael has created this list looking at some of the latest buzzwords that have caused trends or become newsworthy here in Japan. So if you're in Japan, you're probably familiar with some of these. If you're not in Japan, it's kind of an interesting look inside the country as to what's making the news this year. So we'll be talking to Michael a little bit later on in the show. But before we get to Michael, I wanted to talk quickly about getting a job here in Japan. As you know, Gaijin Pod is one of the largest job boards here in Japan. Many of you who are working in Japan, you might have gotten your job through Gaijin Pod, or if you're thinking about coming to Japan, definitely get your resume up on Gaijin Pod. It's the best way to kind of start looking for work here. And one of our clients, Works Japan, has recently come up with a free job hunting seminar and training course. Now, there's a couple of interesting things about trying to find work in Japan here. If you're getting into, like, say, an English language teaching job, this doesn't necessarily apply to you. But if you want to get into more of a Japanese corporate job, then you've got to understand a little bit about how the job hunting procedure works and what are some of the cultural aspects of working in a Japanese company. It's quite different than what you might have experienced back home. So this company, Works Japan, has put together a free seminar for you to take their course and learn a little bit about how to find a job in the Japanese job market. So they have like a self-analysis. They kind of help you figure out what you're good at, what you maybe need some improvement on. They do things like how to write your entry sheet, how to write your resume, because they're very specific about, this is Japan, right? So everything's got to be super specific. So they have like a specific paper to write your resume on. I think you can get it at 7-Eleven. And all these little tiny details. And if you don't do these things like exactly the way the company wants them, chances are they will overlook your resume. And one of the interesting things that this Works Japan does is they actually spend quite a bit of time teaching you about the greetings and the mannerisms and how to address your coworkers. It's not like back home. If you're from America, you know, you got some company hierarchy, but generally you're pretty casual with everybody. Maybe the same in Europe. But it's not so the case here in Japan. You don't walk up to your boss in Japan and be like, "Hey man, what's up? What was your weekend?" That doesn't exactly happen here. So you've got, and even if your Japanese level is okay, you have to be able to speak a certain style of Japanese to address either your superiors or people your level or even below you. So it's an interesting course that they teach, showing you all the kind of ins and outs of working in a Japanese company. So if you're in Japan already and you're kind of looking to get out of English teaching and you want to kind of move up into a corporate job, I definitely recommend taking this course. So we've done a video interview with some of the people who have taken the course. So definitely check that out. You can find that video on our Gaijin Pod blog, which is blog.gaijinpod.com. There's a poster that says Works Japan. So check that out if you're thinking about, you know, changing careers or whatever, or if you're even coming from, you know, abroad and trying to just get right into the Japanese market, I definitely recommend checking out this Works Japan course. I'm very pleased to welcome to the show today Mr. Michael Gakuran, who runs the very popular website gakuranman.com, where he compiles a top 50 Japanese buzzwords list every year. He's just released his latest list for 2013. And welcome, Michael. Welcome to the G-Pod.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So tell us about this list that you've compiled. You've done it 2 years in a row now. Where did the idea for the list come from?
So actually, I was first informed, I guess, of this list from the old Japanese blog Pink Tentacle, which sadly has been quite inactive of late, since basically the end of the earthquake, actually, in 2011 that happened, 3/11. But he used to do like an annual list of these words, and then his blog became inactive. And I was kind of sad to see that, and I wanted to keep this sort of tradition up of translating the top 50 Japanese buzzwords every year. So I took it upon myself to do that. And it's a heck of a task. I'm translating 50 words and researching them all because I don't watch a lot of TV. But yeah, that was the sort of the start of that. And basically every year since then, I've got the list of words and gone and researched and translated them all.
So let's get started with this list here. You've got 50 on your website, but we don't have time to go through all 50. So what you've done is you've taken 10 that you thought would be the most kind of interesting for our users. And if they want to read all 50, they can do so on your website. And we'll include a link on that on Gaijin Pod.
Sure, yeah.
So let's get started with number one.
Okay, so the first word is it's Dangantozan, which basically translates to something like bullet climb or speed climb. And this word basically, it refers to Tozan, obviously, which is mountain climbing in Japan, a popular pastime and hobby for people, where people basically shoot up the mountain in a very short period of time and maybe stay a night and then, you know, shoot back down. And it's kind of like a weekend climb or a day climb. And then it's a very sort of hard experience because they're going so fast, but it's also good because they can save a lot of time, right? And that's actually had like a big impact on the tourism, especially to Mount Fuji, because it became a World Heritage Site this year. So in some ways, it's an interesting phenomenon to see, but also it causes a lot of problems for the environment because so many people are, you know, traversing the same space in a short period of time. So bullet climb, yeah, that's the first word.
So the goal is to climb the mountain as fast as possible?
I think so, yeah. It's to get up there and see the sunset, sunrise, and then, you know, come back down. I actually did one myself when I climbed Mount Fuji a few years ago. I kind of arrived at the foot of Mount Fuji and I hadn't even intended on climbing it, but the trains were actually out of power for some reason. I think lightning struck the line or something like that. So I couldn't go anywhere and decided, well, what the heck, I'll climb Mount Fuji. So like I bought a lightweight jacket, I got the bus to the fifth station and then just, you know, did a night climb, saw the sunrise and then came back down in the morning.
So the word is, what, Dangantozan?
That's right, yeah.
Dangantozan means bullet climb. Interesting.
That's right.
Okay, and what's the next word?
The next one is Bakatta, which is like a, it's basically baka, the word baka, idiot in Japanese, and then the ta at the end is from Twitter. So it basically, it means like the idiot's Twitter, or you could probably say like Twitter, you know, put a hyphen in between twit and ter, like
right.
Twits. Yeah. That was actually a Reddit user that came up with that translation. I thought it was
really?
Quite clever, yeah.
That's pretty good, actually. If you're listening to this, it's kind of hard maybe to understand. It's better to see it on your website. But baka in Japanese means idiot, and then ta is the ending of twit. They call it twita here. So Twitter, but twita. So then put it together, you got bakata. And then you could translate that into English into twit. Which actually really makes sense.
It does, isn't it?
That's funny.
And so this is basically this year, it seems about the younger generations or something, they take photos of themselves doing silly things, like up to no good and mischief. Like, and one of the biggest things was people climbing to those, you know, those giant like freezer cabinets in the convenience stores.
Right, they sell ice cream.
That's
and
right,
like
yeah.
That.
They would climb in there and get a mate to take a picture of them and then they'd put it on Twitter and say, oh, look what I was doing, you know, ha, ha, ha. And this became a big problem, and some of the stores, like one locally owned store, it was like a father and son, and his son like climbed in and did this picture thing, and you know the store had to be closed down because of like hygiene reasons and things. So it actually caused a lot of problems, but because of all this sort of pictures being uploaded by young people, this buzzword became in the top 50 this year.
Yeah, I remember seeing that. It was quite sad, actually, that family lost the license to their store.
Right, yeah.
Just because their son jumped in the cooler. And we should say also, too, that this was really popular right in the peak of summer.
Right, right.
So I think a lot of people are probably looking at the photos thinking, wish I could do that.
Yeah. I can understand it in a way, you know. Like when I was a teenager, university student, I did stupid stuff like that all the time.
Yeah, but I think the difference is when we did stupid stuff, the Twitter wasn't around.
Exactly.
Right? So it just went around your high school.
Yeah.
But here, unfortunately, it can go around the world and it can cause real world consequences for your parents.
It really can, yeah.
But the word is bakata, right?
That's right, yeah.
Bakata. Is this word used in daily conversation or is it just kind of an internet slang word?
I think it's generally internet slang. Okay. Like, I think they would use it mostly on like the two channel forums.
Right.
Those anonymous forums, like to refer to Twitter. It refers to Twitter itself, like basically like the idiot's Twitter, because it's become such a tool for idiots to post their mishaps on, you know.
Right. Okay. Wow. Cool. Okay. And what's the next word?
The next word is JJJ.
JJJ.
Yeah, exactly like that. JJJ. And I actually just started watching it. It was a popular serialized morning drama around April this year called Amachan, which means like little diver or diving girl or something. And basically tells the story of a girl and her mother who returned to the Tohoku region of Japan, actually one of the affected areas in 311. I heard this drama was partly to sort of promote a bit of tourism and attention for that area. But yeah, so she goes back here, and this young teenage girl wants to become an ama. I actually just wrote an article on this on my website as well, which are basically a diving woman. So somebody who would go into the sea and dive for food like sea urchins and clams and things like this, and then bring them back up and sell them. So it's a story about this girl. It was a morning drama. And the area she was in, this JJJ, thing is like a dialect there, which expresses surprise. So you know, like we have like things in Japanese like and surprise emotions like that, right?
Right.
So in this particular dialect, je is that surprise. It's like je, and when you add an extra one like je, then it increases the surprise. So je is like really, really surprised.
That's interesting. If you haven't been in Japan, when you come here and you start to study the language, you'll start to hear all these sounds that actually play a pretty big part in the language themselves. Mm-hmm. Like Michael's saying, is like when Japanese people express either surprise or understanding or agreement or a whole range of emotion, you'll hear them say, they'll usually tilt their head to the side when they do this, and they say, eh?
Yeah.
So in this particular part of Japan, this expression of surprise was je.
That's right, je.
And what part of Japan would this be, do you know?
I think it's the Iwate dialect, Iwate-ben, I think. I'm not entirely sure on that, but it's in the Tohoku region, so the northern region of Japan.
Okay. And then this character would express more surprise by adding more je.
Well, yeah, like all the local people in that area would use this to express surprise. And since she was the girl in the drama, used to live in Tokyo, so she came to Tohoku. She didn't know this word when she first went there. So it was one of the words that was first introduced like in the first or second episode.
Right.
When she asked one of the characters, like, hey, what does that mean, you know? Is that how we say like, wow, or what? Or something like that.
Did these kinds of words from these shows enter the mainstream vernacular at all? Like, you know, there's popular shows in the UK, there's popular shows in America, like shows like Friends, and they would come up with a certain phrase or something like that, then everybody would start saying it. Is similar to this?
That's a good point. I think, yeah. I'm guessing that I haven't really heard it in my sort of daily life, but I think that's because I basically just, you know, only experience the company and my house and the commute in between. So I think if you were sort of out and about or you had Japanese friends you socialized with quite often, you would definitely sort of hear about this because they would have been watching the drama. Obviously, it was in April, so it's a little bit like half a year ago now. But,
Okay. So, listeners, if you're out there, try it, JJJ, and then report back to us and let us know what your friends say.
I'm sure you'll get a few laughs from the Japanese people.
Yeah, especially if you're a new Japanese learner, just throw it out there and see what happens.
Yeah, that would be weird.
So the next word is kind of interesting. The English translation is black corporation. Mm-hmm. What's the Japanese word for it?
So this is buraku kigyo. So it's exactly the same, black corporation in Japanese. And this refers to, as you might imagine, a corporation which is not particularly welcomed or not particularly nice. So it's basically a corporation or a company that basically abuses its employees. For example, asking them pressurizing them into doing lots of overtime without properly reimbursing them and sort of fostering a company culture where it's difficult to really speak out against it. You know, like, well, you know, we're all in this for the company and you know, everybody's doing their best, so you should too. And there's this sort of the passive aggressive pressure here. And you know, people have to stay longer. They don't get properly reimbursed, low pay. So these sort of companies as a whole that that don't treat their employees as they should, referred to as black corporations. And recently, job hunters, young people graduating from university who are looking for their first job, will be like referring to websites and forums and things of lists of black corporations that other people have has written, you know, because they don't want to go into one of these corporations and find it difficult to leave.
Is that kind of, I think that's kind of the image that a lot of people have of Japanese corporations though, isn't it?
Yeah.
The whole company spirit. In your experience working here, how realistic is that? Like,
it's a difficult question. I've only worked in two companies, and one wasn't a company. One was a public institution. It was a city hall. So I was on the JET program originally, working as a CIR, which is a coordinator of international relations. So I worked for a local city hall.
Right.
And that was a public institution, obviously. So I went home pretty much on time every day, and there was nothing at all wrong with it. I was well immersed, you know. But after that, my current job now, it's certainly not a black corporation, but I do have to do more work, and there's more overtime. And there's, because it's a private company, you know, the emphasis on growing the company and increasing the profits for the company and things like that, which is very interesting and a great learning experience in itself. But there is definitely that sort of working culture, very hardworking culture, and the sort of mentality of doing overtime to improve yourself in the company. So yeah, that definitely exists. But I think black corporations are the companies that take that to the extreme, and it's really just not acceptable.
Yeah, actually, I have a friend of mine. She works in a Japanese advertising agency here, and she says, you know, it's not unheard of for her to work till 3 or 4 in the morning.
Wow.
And then go home and then just come back the next day.
Uh-huh.
So, and you know, she doesn't voice any complaint about it. And she tells me, like, you know, I can't really say anything because all my coworkers are kind of working the same amount of hours. So it feels strange for me to voice my opinion. And if anybody does, the immediate response from management is, well, it's the best, you know, best thing for the company. And so she's kind of in a tough situation. But I think she would definitely list her company as one of these black corporations. It's interesting that they have this list online.
Oh, there is. There's a website. If you Google like Brakkyo in Japanese, it's like the first or second hit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Do these websites know, do these companies know that this list exists?
Oh, I'm sure they do, yeah. I'm sure they're not happy about it either.
So if you're working for one of these black corporations, will you visit the next word on your list, which is purging room?
Yeah, this was my translation. There's probably a better one out there. But so the Japanese is called oidashi beya, which is basically the running you out room, like literally translated, like the chasing you out room. So it's basically a room at certain companies where employees that aren't performing to the company's expectations, or they're old perhaps, and the company wants to get rid of them, they put them in this room. To do really menial tasks that they're way overqualified to do, you know, like maybe stapling like 1,000 documents together and stuff like that. Yeah, and their job will be just like to go to this room every day and to do these menial tasks or to do job hunting. And it's basically sort of the atmosphere in the company is that they want them to quit of their own accord, so they don't have to deal with all the hassle and paperwork of firing them, because they're in Japan, it's very difficult to fire a full-time employee. So they put them in this room to try and get them to quit of their own accord. And that's why this translation here, the purging room, as I said it, like the company's trying to purge them from the, you know, the walls of the corporation and stuff.
And the Japanese word is what?
It's oidashi beya.
Oidashi beya.
Yeah, like it's so the kanji is like to chase, and then you've got to exit, and then you've got room.
Right. So chasing out room.
Exactly, yeah.
Actually, I remember reading an article about this. I can't remember where I read it, but it was exactly that. It was these guys who've been with the company so long that they can't really be fired, but the company doesn't want them around anymore.
Exactly,
So it's kind of like this battle of wits between this employee who's just doing this menial job for 8, 10 hours a day, and the company's just trying to figure out a way to make their job even more menial, hoping that they'll quit. And then the employee is like, never, I'm never going to quit because I want my pension and
exactly,
I want this.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
So it's this kind of interesting battle of wills between this, you know, former great employee, still highly qualified, and the company who can't get rid of them.
Yeah.
So if you work too much overtime and you become too qualified and too good for the company, you might end up in the purging room.
I certainly hope not.
Okay, that's great. So what's next on your list?
So next is Gotochi Kyara, which I translated to local characters. But probably most people know them as like the regional mascots. So these weird sort of characters, people in these weird character suits that sort of sponsor the local governments and prefectures, right?
Okay.
I'm sure you've seen all sorts of weird, colorful characters. So that's referring to these. And in recent years, these have been become really, really popular. Like the number one local character this year was also a buzzword, which I didn't put in my list because I'm baffled by the popularity of it. It's called Funashi. It's like a giant pear or something like that.
Right.
So yeah, these local characters have been sort of getting a lot of attention, and that's the reason for the inclusion in this list here. Actually, one of them, funnily enough, the one that took second place in like the regional mascot, regional mascot of the whole company. There was like a competition, so all the regional mascots got together, and then the one that took second place was the mascot from the city that I used to work in.
Oh yeah.
But when I was there, they didn't have the mascot. It was like created just after I left, which is called Okazaemon, which is just a really weird, like, it's a black and white character. It's kind of, it's really difficult to describe. It kind of looks a little bit like a cat in a way, but it's not a cat, it's a human. And it's got a weird hairstyle, and basically the characters for the city, Okazaki, that's the city it represents. The Oka character makes up its face, and the Zaki character makes up its chest. And it's just bizarre. I just know the word to describe it.
We'll post a picture of it on the Gaijinpa blog there, because it's not the type of mascot that you would initially think of to create to welcome people to your city. It's kind of creepy looking, actually.
It is.
Not something that you would think that would bring a lot of tourists or people to your city.
Uh-huh.
But these mascots, they're quite popular, aren't they? In municipalities, even many companies kind of use a mascot.
Oh, they do. Oh, Japan's got a mascot culture. There's something for everything. You know, the National Police Agency has a mascot.
And I think another one that made the news recently was that mascot created by TEPCO.
Oh, yeah.
You know the one I'm talking about? The one that looks like an egg with
wings?
Yeah.
What was that one? Fukupi or something like that.
Yeah, I think the Japanese pronunciation is Fukupi, but if you're English and you read it a different way, it could be like fuck you, pee.
Exactly. I thought I read it as like it's Fukupi, so it's like fuck up or something.
Right.
Which is like the whole Fukushima disaster in a nutshell, or an eggshell.
Right. Like you think if you're the head of TEPCO, which has been blamed for one of the worst environmental nuclear disasters in history, the last name that you would want your mascot to have is any kind of word that looks like it says fuck up.
And it sounds like it as well. It really does.
Even in Japanese, it sounds like it.
Yeah.
So you can tell, like, and the egg, I don't understand what the egg is like. How does that relate to what they do? But
I think there was an explanation, like a rebirth or something like that. I don't know.
Right. You can bet, though, like this probably some guy who doesn't speak any English probably just tried to translate something in Japanese using his little pocket dictionary, came up with this. Yeah, it looks good. And then the big media storm after.
Yeah.
But yeah, those mascots are kind of funny because you do see them around quite a bit.
They do. They're also known by the name Yuru Kyara. Like, Yuru characters, basically. And it's quite difficult to translate the word Yuru, but it kind of means like loose, like spaced out, a bit relaxed. And if you see it, if more than one of these characters, you kind of get the impression, you know, they're very spaced out and bizarre and weird. I'm trying to think the perfect English word, but none has come to mind yet. So
okay.
Yuru Kyara.
Well, another big word that we've heard in the news a lot, and I'm sure many people have heard probably around the world, is our next word, and that is Abenomics.
Yes, Abenomics. So it's a portmanteau, isn't it, with Abe and economics.
Right.
Abenomics. And I read on, I think it was Wikipedia, that this is not the first time this has been used. Like, this, like the name of a politician in economics. Like,
No.
Apparently, yeah. It's been used to refer to previous politicians in, like, America and other countries when there's been somebody that's come up with a
very... I think they had Reaganomics, right?
That's right, yeah. That, Reaganomics? That was one of them. So.
So for those of you Americans, this is Shinzo Abe as the Prime Minister of Japan. Mm-hmm. Think of it like Reaganomics.
Exactly.
Do we know much about what the policies of Abenomics are?
So I'm not very well-versed in the politics going on in Japan. I mean, I read the background to it, and it's like the three arrows. This was also another buzzword this year, the three arrows of Abenomics policies, which basically the sort of the three sort of prongs that he is pushing to reform Japan and get it out of the deflation and the recession it's been in, which I'm reading here. So the first one is quantitative easing, the second fiscal stimulus, and the third structural reform. So I'm sure the people who are a bunch of smarter than me and follow the news properly will be able to explain these things. But yeah, so
you know who would know this? Because I mean, I don't really know much about it either, but you know who would be able to give us an hour show on this is Hiko Simon.
Oh yeah, he's really into the news, yeah.
That guy knows so much about Japanese politics, it's scary.
He does like a weekly video podcast or blog or something.
Yeah, the 2.5 Oyajis.
That's right, yeah, with Victor, yeah.
So if you know what, we'll ask Hiko to do a special show on it and we'll link to it from this episode.
Yeah, I'm sure we have some great insights.
Abenomics is basically the Prime Minister's plan to revitalize the Japanese economy through quantitative easing, which is dumping money into the economy, lowering the value of the Japanese yen and creating some stimulus for people to go shopping, and also raising the sales tax next year to 8%.
That's it. I was going to say that for most... the average consumer, the thing they'll be most concerned about is from next March, this sales tax is rising from 5% to 8%, and then the following year to up to 10%, so doubling. So that's going to have an effect. I think that has something to do with the reason people are buying now, and it's kind of, from what I gather, Abenomics is working, at least a little bit. And I think one of the reasons is that people realize this sales tax is coming, so they're buying now, you know.
So it works great now. Next March, the economy takes a nosedive when everyone stops buying. But we'll leave that stuff up to Hiko. We'll have a special show with him, and he can tell us all about it. I'm actually more interested in the next word, which is giant squid.
So this is not particularly a Japanese word at all, but the Japanese is obviously the translation, daioika. But it's in the news because I think it was it January this year? January this year, they basically got this HD footage of the giant squid, which lives in like the depths of the ocean, like deep sea, where there's no light penetrating down there. I think it was around 600 meters. And it's a really elusive creature that's never been caught in this way before on film. And one of the scientists that went there it's not Japanese scientist. Her name is Edith Widder, I think it is. The reason I know about her is because I have a little penchant for bioluminescence, which is like the natural light that living organisms give off. For example, fireflies or jellyfish. And she has a great interest in that and studies that. And she was one of the scientists, along with a Japanese scientist, who went on the submersible down to the depths and used an optical lure, which basically mimicked the scream of a jellyfish. So when a deep sea jellyfish is basically frightened or being attacked by a predator, it will put on a light show. So this like blue light, and that would basically attract a bigger predator to eat the thing that's eating it. And it worked. And this giant squid came, and then they turned on the white lights and got it on film. And it was amazing, you know.
How big was it? Do you know?
That's a good question. I'm not sure how big it was, but it's very, very big. Like, definitely way bigger than we would think it to be. Like, several people high. I think it's bigger than that as well.
So at least 2 or 3 meters long?
Oh, longer than that. Longer than that. Oh, yeah, really? Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of interesting that they can capture these things that otherwise, you know, no one would ever see it. It's so far down below the depths of the ocean that there's no light down there. Very rarely do scientists ever go down there. So it's kind of a unique opportunity to get a glimpse of one of these. I think the only time they really kind of see them is when they die and they kind of wash up on the shore somewhere, right?
So. Yes, that's right. Yeah, so it was a live footage of the giant squid. I think it may have been the first live footage that's been taken in this way. Right.
Okay, and then the Japanese word is what? What's that?
Daioika. So basically, a giant squid. Literally, yeah.
But the next word is kind of an interesting word that came about. I think this word kind of came about when Tokyo was awarded the Olympics, and that is omotenashi.
That's the one, yep. So basically, yeah, as you said, when Tokyo won the bid to host the Olympics in 2020, then the presenter, who basically gave a speech after that, talked about Japan, and one of the words that she emphasized as a very strong part of Japanese culture was this word omotenashi, and she did it in a way that really emphasized it. Hmm. Like she you probably saw the video, right? So she like with her using her hands as well. She like omotenashi, okay. Like really emphasizing each syllable in the word, right? And that really caught on, and it was like a buzz of conversation in schools and workplaces for days and weeks afterwards.
And can you tell the audience, if they don't know, what is omotenashi?
Yeah, it's a really interesting concept. Like basically, it's being hospitable. So it's like the spirit of hospitality, like the separation of the host and the guest, usually used in reference to sort of Japanese hospitality. And the way that I've sort of understood it is it goes beyond regular hospitality, because it kind of really thinks about the needs of the person. Mm. So if I went to stay at a hotel and I was thirsty and I asked the host for a glass of water and they got me one, I would just be, you know, a hospitable host. But this omotenashi, like the host would probably see that I'm tired and sweating, and they would already have a glass of water on my table before I even, you know, got there, right? Or something like that. Yeah. So, and this is like the omotenashi, like thinking of the needs of the guest before they're even asking it.
You know, I can give you a good example of omotenashi that probably people can relate to if you've got an iPhone, is that a few years ago when I was, before I moved here, I was coming here on holiday, and there's a company that I could rent an iPhone from. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have a Japanese phone, so I'd rent an iPhone from this company and they would leave it at my hotel, and it was great. I could use it. And the thing is, I had to put the SIM card in the iPhone. Now, mm-hmm. For those of you who kind of remember a while back, before Apple started including that little SIM card adapter, what did you use to pop out that tray? You probably used a bent paperclip, right? Mm-hmm. Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. Well, this mm-hmm. company actually included a bent paperclip in the packaging for their iPhone with a wow. little note on it said, please be careful. Please use this to open the SIM tray and put your SIM card in there.
Wow.
That's omotenashi.
It is. That's omotenashi. Yeah. Very good.
Because the funny thing is as I was bringing things out, I kind of said to myself, like, oh, crap, I need that paperclip. Like, I wonder if my hotel has one. And then sure enough, blink, it pops out of the envelope. And I thought, ah, omotenashi.
It's a great word. Yeah, it really is.
So it'd be kind of interesting to see how Japan takes this word and applies it to when the Olympics are here.
Well, that was one of the reasons that they won, I think, is that they're a very, very safe city, and they had this sort of this very strong culture of receiving guests and making them feel very comfortable. So, yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting in the years coming up to 2020, seeing how they make preparations.
I heard actually at one point that they're even thinking about changing some of the signs around the city to reflect more English in them.
Oh, I'm sure they will. That must be like number one on their list.
Speaking of tourism, that brings us to our last word. Now, this is kind of an interesting word. The English translation is dark tourism.
Yep, and that's basically exactly the same, dark tourism. So, yeah, dark tourism. I hadn't heard of this before it was in this list, but it's not a Japanese word per se. It's, you know, there's an English word, dark tourism, that exists as well. Right. That refers to basically like disaster tourism or grief tourism. So usually when you go on holiday, you go to sites that are beautiful or famous because they have some very rich culture or something like that, right? That's like your regular image of tourism. So black tourism is going to sites that are sort of famous or infamous for basically bad reasons. So they're usually associated with sites of death. So, for example, you might have Chernobyl or Auschwitz, right. Ground Zero in New York, and probably, you know, well, even now, but certainly in a few years' time, I think Fukushima will be on this list. And so the dark tourism is basically going to these sites and I guess experiencing them in a way, maybe going to museums or, you know, looking around.
You know, the interesting thing about these kind of like disaster tourism, it can sound kind of creepy at first. Like, ooh, that's weird. Why would you want to visit a place like that? But I don't know. Maybe I'm just strange. But when I see pictures of Chernobyl online, I actually do want to visit it because it's kind of a neat idea to think that this whole town is completely preserved and yet abandoned because you don't really see that anywhere else.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not, you know, the sort of place an ordinary person would get to or even want to see in most situations. But when you do see like the odd picture and stuff that leaks out, it's like a surreal in a way, isn't it?
Right.
It's like a painting sometimes.
It's actually a very strange feeling to be in a city that's totally abandoned. You know, I think most people probably never experienced that. I experienced it a little bit when I was living in Thailand when they had the political protests a few years ago, and I was actually out filming that. And I wandered into one part of the city that, like, just a couple of days before was jam-packed with protesters and military and army. And for whatever reason, it had cleared out completely the day that I was there. So you ever see those kind of zombie movies? Like I think it was like 28 Days Later when the guy's walking around.
Oh, there's nobody
in the city. That's what this was like. I was walking down this big freeway, like, you know, 5-lane freeway, and there wasn't a single person around me. And I didn't know why. So it's kind of interesting and kind of scary at the same time.
It is. It's really interesting for me that this word is in this year's list because that's actually one of my hobbies, I guess you could call it. Since a few years ago, is visiting like ruins.
Oh, okay.
So you have the word urban exploration in English or haikyo in Japanese, which means abandoned place. And I enjoy photography and also sort of exploration. So these two things just go hand in hand. And I'll rent a car some weekends and go off with a friend to some remote location in the mountains where there's an abandoned village or you know, you can even find abandoned cities. So the most famous one in Japan is obviously Gunkanjima, or Battleship Island, which is just off the coast of Nagasaki in Kyushu, right? And I went there in 2010 with a friend of mine. And it was a ghost town. It's just an abandoned city, which is on an island, you know, separated from the mainland.
What was it originally? It was a mining town?
Yeah, that's right. So it was originally set up to mine coal. So the miners would go down to the mines by a shaft on the island and then dig up the coal. But it was a self-contained community as well.
Right.
I mean, there were boats that went back and forth to bring food and stuff, but it was actually the most densely populated place on Earth at one point. Like everybody's living in these high-rise apartments cramped together, several people in a small box apartment, you know.
Right. Actually, it was originally built in 1810, right? I'm just looking on your website. It says discovery of coal in 1810.
I don't think it was built that early, but yeah, I think the coal was discovered around that time. Yeah.
And so for those of you who maybe don't know, this man-made island was featured in the latest Bond movie. So if you've seen the latest Bond movie, Skyfall, the battle scene where he encounters the bad guy, gets captured and encounters the bad guy, that's where they filmed this.
Yeah, you see him. You actually see the actual island, Gunkanjima, in the Bond film when they're approaching on the yacht.
Right.
But the shots where they're on the island were actually filmed in a studio like that was made on set in the UK.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah.
Oh,
so the only actual
the
shots of the island that are actually of the island are where they're approaching it.
Oh, now I'm all disappointed because I thought that was actually on the island.
Unfortunately not. No. You have to visit my post
damn
to see
movie
the actual
trickery. Yeah, well, I've actually seen that. I've seen your article before, and if you're into urban exploration, definitely check out the photographs because the photographs on your site are just amazing and creepy at the same time. Like, it's just interesting because like the island is decaying, the buildings are falling apart, so there's kind of this chaos but complete stillness at the same time.
It really is beautiful in a way. I think it. I mean, maybe I'm sounding overly philosophical to say this, but I think it really relates to that Japanese concept of wabi-sabi, you know, like this sort of the transience of things, how it's just a cycle of life and death and decay. And it really is, like for me as a photographer and explorer, just going to these places, and often I'm on my own as well, the silence and, you know, and just looking around, seeing these scenes that you couldn't imagine sometimes. Yeah, it's amazing.
Right. I think there's a few of these around town. I've seen some other photographs around on the web. People visited like an old, what was the one? Old, like a karaoke bar, I think once. I saw one. And an old amusement park. And it's interesting that they're just completely abandoned. Like they don't demolish it. They just decide one day, that's it, finish, close the doors. And everything inside stays as it was.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they have been demolishing more and more places, I think to do with a change in the law this year. But,
right.
But yeah, there are so many places that have just sort of left because it's too expensive to actually demolish them properly, you know?
Right, right, right. Well, that's been great. I've been really enjoyed talking to you, learning a little bit more about the buzzwords happening this year. If you want to know about the words that we discussed or even more, check out Michael's website at gakudan.com and you can find his top 50 Japanese buzzwords, and I'll post a link to it from our website at gaijinpod.com. Hey, thanks, Michael. Thanks for coming on the show. I really enjoyed talking with you.
Well, thank you very much. It was great. Yeah.
So thanks again to Michael for coming on the show and giving us a sneak peek at the top 50 Japanese buzzwords of 2013. We only had time for 10 on our show now, but if you want to check out the full list of 50, you can do so on his website at gakudan.com. And it really is quite an interesting look because he goes into way more detail on some of these other words. And if you're a bit of a kanji buff, if you're one of those weird people who like studying kanji, check out the comments on his post because there's an interesting discussion going on about how he translated certain words, and people have kind of suggested different kanji and all that. So it's a really good look at kind of the language of Japan and what's gone on the last year. So definitely recommend checking that out. And I'll post a link to his site from our Gaijinpod blog as well. Also want to quickly mention that if you're thinking about changing jobs or you need a job in Japan or you're coming here, you don't know what to do, recommend checking out the Works Japan job guidance course. This is a free seminar for anyone who's looking for work, and what they'll do is they'll give you a self-analysis. They tell you, okay, this is where you're good at, this is where you need some work, and they teach you all these tiny things that you need to know when trying to get a job in Japan, such as how to fill out an entry sheet, how to fill out your resume properly, how to do a proper greeting, how to exchange your business card, how to do email properly, all these kind of small things that you may not necessarily think about. They're so different here than back home, and this will separate you from everybody else who doesn't know this kind of thing. And it may sound kind of trivial, right? It may sound like, what's the big deal? I just hand the guy my card. But you got to understand that Japanese companies, they operate on procedure. This entire country operates on procedure. And if you don't get it, if you don't do that, if you cannot demonstrate that you can understand their system, well, they're going to pass you over. There's no need for them to waste any time on you because there's 100 other people waiting to get that same job. So for you to kind of stand out, especially as a foreigner, you need to demonstrate that you get it. You understand Japanese culture and you won't be any kind of problems as well. As a matter of fact, you're an asset to the company. And this kind of course is what's going to give you that edge. So definitely recommend checking it out. It's totally free. And at the end of the course, they put you in front of Japanese companies that are looking to hire. So it saves you a ton of time. All the information for this course, as well as the introduction video, you can find that on our Gaijinpod blog as well. It's blog.gaijinpod/worksjapan. So definitely check that out. Also want to quickly mention that if you get any feedback for the show, you want to be on the show, you know someone who wants to be on the show, you have a guest that you might want to recommend, feel free to send me an email at blog@gaijinpod.com, and I'll definitely follow up with that. You can also find us on the social medias. Is that a new word? I just coined that word. Social medias at facebook.com/gaijinpod. Also on Twitter at gaijinpod as well. And definitely recommend checking out our YouTube page. We've been working hard making a bunch of videos on YouTube. So on YouTube, we're at gaijinpod as well. And one last quick thing. I have a favor to ask everybody is if you're listening to this on iTunes, you got, say, an iPod and you've subscribed through iTunes, could you leave us feedback or a comment or rating on iTunes? What iTunes does is it bases your ranking on the kind of feedback that you're getting. So you can have a really popular show, everyone's downloading it, but if no one's leaving any comments or ratings on iTunes, then iTunes puts it on page 47. So it would be great if you are listening to this on iTunes, whether you rate the show 1 or 5, you like it or hate it, doesn't matter. If you could just go on iTunes, give us a quick rating, that will help our boost our ranking a bit, and really appreciate it. So that's it. That covers everything I needed to say. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Anthony Joe, and bye-bye.